Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Heal and Thrive After Narcissistic Abuse podcast. This is your host, Effie, and it's been a little while, but I like to take some time to process things and space everything out a little bit, so that you can have time to catch up on listening to the episodes and, I'd like to, as I move along in my healing process, to allow myself the time to live fully in the moment of each day and experience life again now that I'm feeling better and well on my way to thriving. So I would like to just say that I hope you're all hanging in there. If you are still in a, for those listeners who are still in a toxic relationship, I hope that you can listen to this and let it enlighten and hopefully provide the strength for you to make the move and the necessary changes that you need to make to remove yourself from the toxicity once and for all. For those listeners who are already out of the toxic relationship, whether you were the one ones leaving or the ones discarded by the toxic narcissist, for those of you early on in the recovery, I know how that must feel. I've been there. A lot of survivors have been there. And I have faith in you that you can take the necessary steps that you need to take, including researching what this horrible, horrible type of disorder is and what you experienced as a recipient of such abuse, to understand that fully, to grasp that fully, and then to move on to a place where you're seeking out information, activities, and healthier ways of being, of recovering, of channeling all of those emotions, the roller coaster of emotions, especially in the beginning stages of your recovery. And know that it takes time. Time will be your friend in this. Time will be what is needed to fully heal. That said, something that the other survivors know, including myself, who have moved on past the initial stages of recovery, is that the most important thing, and I should say gift, that you can give to yourself is get to a point where you enforce no contact, absolutely no contact with the narcissist. And by no contact, I not only mean not seeing the person, not talking to the person, or communicating in any way, but also blocking them as if they don't exist on social media. Completely disengaging from their social media accounts. We are living in an age where we are constantly glued to our devices, and it makes it very tempting to access, to get that high, that rush of adrenaline that we're missing now that we're out of that toxicity. Again, all those chemicals that were surging in our brains and our bodies during the course of this toxic relationship, all of those chemicals that kept us on a high and then a low and then everything else in between are highly addictive. It's a highly addictive way of being. And that's what creates, as we've gone over in the past, the trauma bond. And also, part of that is seeking constant validation, because we were in something that required us to turn to the narcissist to obtain our daily dose of validation. He or she positioned themselves in such a way that they became a kind of preacher, teacher, guru type, who is going to show us the way, who's going to take us little wounded birds and show us how everything works, tell us how to live, how to breathe, what to wear, what to eat. And as long as we went along with all of this, as long as we reflected back his or her greatness, then everything was smooth. But of course, those kinds of setups are meant to fail, because inevitably we are, as empaths, empathetic, sensitive people who have needs of our own, who have dreams of our own. So we have voices that were once heard loud and clear, but with the narcissist, we would have to set, and oftentimes we put that aside, we set that aside, because he or she comes first, the narcissist. We were trained to put on a pedestal, to not disturb, to make sure that the focus remained on them. And so the minute we posed a challenge, the minute we felt uncomfortable with something that the narcissist said or did, or had an opposing point of view and made it known, well, that was that, wasn't it? And then that horrific cycle we've talked about began, of all of that, the projections, the gaslighting, blame shifting, devaluations, and finally the discard, if we stayed long enough for that to happen. So we know what we've been through, but we also know that because of those, that roller coaster, that dramatic situation we kept living in, hyper vigilance is what they call it. We were living in a state of hypervigilance to make sure that he wouldn't leave us, to make sure that we could go back, to try to bring it back to that initial phase that we all craved and, as we came to find, we're never going to get back. Because obviously that was just meant to hook us. That was not meant to, as a genuine effort to establish a loving, caring relationship that grows into something past infatuation and past the fantasy of a Peter Pan, the fantasy of a young boy who never grew from that five-year-old stage. I'm sorry, I'm a woman, and so I will oftentimes refer to the narcissist as a he or a man. That's not to say, again, that there aren't women, female narcissists. There are. There are female sociopaths, there are female abusers out there, but the statistics show that the highly malignant narcissists, the numbers speak for themselves, and at least all the studies that have been done to date that I've read about show that the majority are men who inflict this on women. As women, we tend to be more empathic and in terms of our in within the relationship context, we seek to take care. Biologically, we're wired to raise children and families, and that biologically makes us more prone to sticking it out, making it last, regardless of how toxic something is, unfortunately. So there's also the power imbalance, the physical power disparity that is not to be taken for granted. It exists and it's there, and in most cases it's used against us. So anyway, when I speak about the narcissist and I refer to the narcissist as a he or as a male, it's because this is my personal experience. But again, that's not to in any way minimize what male survivors have gone through at the hands of women, female abusers and narcissists. So pardon me for that, but fill in the blanks. So it is very important, going back to the no contact, as late stage survivors who have gone through most of the phases are now in a more advanced stage in the recovery, know through trial and error that the only thing that works is no contact, full no contact, and time. Time for those chemicals that we feel initially and the effects of those chemicals and the trauma bond to dissipate, to lessen, to get to a point where we are in a, you know, our baseline, a place where we feel even keel, and then to have enough time to process what occurred, to tell our story, to have it validated, either self-validated or validated by supportive, understanding friends and family, people we trust that we know we can turn to, who will not judge and will not try to force us to, again, to get over it. And I've talked about that in other episodes, not to turn to people who try to force the recovery. It takes time. And as you heard in the last episode, I went through a setback even later on in my recovery phase. And that can happen because recovery is not, and healing is not, linear. It can be a little bit of for as long as you're on the right path, even if you veer off the road a little bit, you can get back on because you have the tools to get back on. And as you go along in your recovery, this will happen less frequently until one fine day you will realize that, oh my God, it hasn't happened in a very long time, and that you're no longer even thinking about the ex-narcissist on a daily basis. It does happen. It takes time again, but it does happen. So I wanted to just recap on all of that. And now I'd like to talk to you about a couple things. One is you may have come across in your reading of the material about these types of relationships with narcissists, you might have come across the term codependent or codependency. And I just want to point that out and set the record straight, and also warn you against continuing to read or watch anything or anyone, whether it's a blog, whether it's a YouTube video, whether it's another podcaster, anyone that pretty much uses the term codependent to and attaches that label to survivors of abuse, survivors of narcissistic abuse. I want you to just stop reading, stop watching, and try to find material that treats survivors with the respect that we deserve, that doesn't label as something that can be perceived as problematic or pathological, or critical, judgmental. It's very important that you not take that in. Codependency refers, or originally referred to, relationships between, in most cases, alcoholics, but then became substance abusers, and their significant others, that there was some kind of enabling and dependency, and they, in talking about codependency, it was like very attaching a negative label at times that to that person, the individual who could not extricate themselves from that type of relationship. And that there was something fundamentally wrong, and going back to childhood, that there was some kind of disorder that pre-existed the relationship, that pre-existed the abuse in the survivor. So this is very dangerous territory. We can refer ourselves and allow others to refer to us as empaths, because we are. In my reading of survivors' stories and listening, and also in other survivors reaching out to me, emailing me their stories, or expressing their gratitude to me about the podcast, about, you know, how it's helped them. In all these stories, in my interactions with other survivors, there is a common thread that unites us, and common personality traits and other traits that I see. And it's so clear now, clearer than ever. A, how emotionally intelligent we are. B, how incredibly sensitive and open, despite the pain, we are. 3, how beautiful our souls, our internal world, and even externally, I oftentimes find just beautiful people inside and out. Very smart, in most cases, successful, whether in work or interests or outside of that relationship. I see individuals who are absolutely, incontrovertibly beautiful people inside and out, and successful people. And this to me is very significant. And I'm sure for a lot of you reading this and you picked up on it, it's very significant, because what this shows is that we do come from a place of being empowered. We do have an incredible amount of strength within us and light within us. And this is exactly what attracted the disordered cluster bees to us. This is what attracted them to us. Now, are we more prone to getting into relationships like these? Perhaps, but I'll tell you why. And maybe if we can understand it better, we can look out for those signs and avoid them going forward. Recognize the red flags, see it coming, and put a stop to it before we get too attached and trauma bonded to someone, another narcissist, another abuser. What I see is like I said, individuals who have this inner strength and this this light and sensitivity. And as empath sensitive types, we want to take in people suffering, who approach us with stories of being misunderstood. Nobody, you know, when I with my narcissist ex, one of the things he kept telling me in the beginning and kept repeating even throughout the relationship, how nobody understood him. Nobody understood his struggles as an entrepreneur. Nobody understood why he took this route. Nobody could understand how different he was and what he wanted to accomplish, and that he was meant for something greater than even him, and that God was on his side, but nobody understood this. These were the kinds of statements that he would make to me. So I thought, oh my God, you know, I want to help this man. I want to show him I'm different from all his exes. I want to show him I'm different from all those people, the world. You know, of course I'm going to stand by his side. Of course I'm going to be there for him through thick and thin. That's what loving partners are supposed to do. And I took that on. And I think a lot of us take it on when someone approaches us from that wounded place, or that place where, you know, calls to the feminine in us, the mother in us, the caretaker in us. It's very easy for an empath, for a sensitive type, for a giving type, to want to just put everything aside for this person and prioritize that person. And in doing so, we neglect to not so much notice the red flags, because I believe that we all sense things were off, because we're highly intuitive too. I do see that trait as well. But I think beyond just noticing is to take that in, process it, and say, wait a second, this is not right. Something's off with this picture. Something doesn't sit right with me. Some things, patterns now are forming. This person is behaving in an odd way, or in a horrible way, or saying things that are awful, making me uncomfortable, or even beyond uncomfortable, making me agitated and anxious. And when I say something, I get shut down, I get stonewalled, I get, accused of not being that understanding partner. So we do not we noticed the signs, but perhaps we did not properly process them, give ourselves the space to process, and to make a choice that we don't have to take that on. We are not other people's saviors. We are not here to sacrifice ourselves. We are here to enter into a reciprocal, loving, caring, giving relationship that feels right, that feels healthy more days than not, that doesn't require so much sacrifice on our part. Doesn't require us to put our needs aside or to put our dreams aside or to put all of our focus on this one person, because we have our own lives to live. We have our beautiful lives to live, our careers, our interests, our own families of origin, our friendships to maintain. We can't just put everything on this one person and with tunnel vision, and yet that's what most of us did. And that's why we're where we're at right now. So if we recognize that in us, and if we recognize our tendency to be like this. And again, there is nothing wrong with being like that with someone who gives equally, who takes our feelings into consideration, who goes out of their way more times than not, make sure we're safe, make sure we feel loved, make sure we don't feel anxious in any way. They don't rattle us. In those kinds of relationships, yes, it's normal both parties to focus in on each other, to be there for each other, to maybe prioritize the relationship over certain other things in one's life. But that takes time, and you have to be certain that you are in this type of relationship. And again, I speak from experience because I've faltered. And I'm in this place and doing this podcast because I didn't think about these things before. I just let somebody come in and occupy space in my life. And I would get hooked on beautiful words and wanting to save, wanting to take care of someone who appeared misunderstood or claimed he was misunderstood, and now I know why. That's probably true, and probably because of the narcissist that he is, that nobody who got really close to him wanted to deal with. So, again, very important to differentiate between the label of codependent and being an empath and what that means in the context of relationships. And I think if we make that proper distinction and we understand our qualities that perhaps are beautiful, that not perhaps, they are for sure beautiful qualities to have, but to know who we should allow into our lives, to be able to make that proper good choice for ourselves early on before there's any kind of trauma bond. That's very important. And hopefully we can start to think about that and put it into practice going forward. So I really wanted to touch upon that. The other thing I'd like to also mention today is this concept of bringing the focus back to ourselves that is so crucial in recovery. And do not allow anyone to make you feel as if you are being selfish for doing so, or that you are somehow the narcissist for bringing the focus back to you. How I'm going to, and I've heard this too, and I've also read it in my research, how I'm going to call it and how it's called is radical self-care. So it's not just about the self-care that we think of, like taking a warm bath or getting a massage or putting some soothing music on and turning to aromatherapy and essential oils, which are all wonderful things to do. And I've talked about this in prior episodes where that had incredibly helped me. I started doing those sound healing meditations, listening to the sounds of a rainforest every morning upon waking up or before going to sleep. I bought a diffuser, and I got essential oils like bergamot, which is supposed to heal and calm you down, lower your heart rate. So important when we're in that hypervigilant state or we can't relax because we're going through so much and so much intensity to get over this hell. So I am all for those things. But when I talk about and you read something about radical self-care, what that means is that you must prioritize yourself. Now is the time to only think of yourself. That's not to say that you can't be there for a friend. That's not to say that you will be turned into a narcissist all of a sudden. No. That's to say that for a change, after all that effort, after all that hell of focusing on this ungrateful person who couldn't even acknowledge how much their partner did for them, how much their partner helped them, how much their partner tolerated, can't even say a thank you, that it is time to say thank you, to yourself, for having the strength, for finding those morsels of strength within you to say no more. Whether you left or they left you, doesn't matter. Because you're not going back. Even if they left you, you don't want that person anymore. You reject them now. And to have that strength to say, I want to live. I want to get past this. I want to fight to survive this and to get to a place where I can stand on my own two feet again, where I can go back into my essence, rediscover myself, and to make better, healthier choices for myself. And if that means by radical that you cut off, not only you cut off the narcissist, which is required if you are to heal fully, but to cut off any mutual friends who rattle you, to cut off any other friends who have mistreated you or who don't make you feel right, to even cut off your relationship, if need be, with certain family members that have and continue to be toxic, to basically make the choice to eliminate or restrict your interactions with these kinds of toxic people. And also to focus, like I said, on you. What is it that's going to help you? Make a list of all the things that you think you can bring into your life that will help you get back to you. What are your interests? Write them down. What are the hobbies that you neglected? What are the dreams that you have for your future? What are the things you've always wanted to do that you had to put aside because of the narcissist? Whatever it is, make that list and say, come hell or high water, I am going to stick to this and I'm going to start pursuing everything that I neglected, everything that I left behind. All that attention, all that love, you're gonna bring it back to you, and you're gonna shore up your boundaries. You're gonna create boundaries so that they're impenetrable. These kinds of people, whether they're friends or romantic interests, are not going to penetrate those boundaries. They're not going to get to you. They're not going to be in your life. You're not going to allow that to happen. Life is indeed short and time flies. And, you know, we've been through what we've been through, but no more after this. No more. We say enough. And if that means that we approach a new relationship with very little in terms of trust, that's fine. You shouldn't trust. No. Not after everything you've been through. You know when trust comes into play? When enough time has passed that you've seen there's a consistent pattern of behavior that is healthy, that is loving, that is caring, that is giving in a reciprocal way, that you're getting back as much as you're giving. At that point, you can start letting your guard down, but not before. And do not allow anyone to pressure you into any situation. Do not allow any new person that you start dating to force you to reveal things about your history or about your past. Be careful who you share that precious information with, because these kinds of toxic people are collectors of information. There was so much of that happening in my former relationship, where the narc was all over me, pressuring me to give up information. And one thing he kept saying to me that I'll never forget, and it makes my hair stand up thinking about it. He kept asking me, "What are you afraid of, Effie? What are you afraid of? I don't understand what you're afraid of. Don't be afraid. I know you're afraid. What are you afraid of?" These were repeated attempts to figure out every last fear of mine that would give him the information that he needed to have the upper hand. Because whether consciously or not, he knew that information meant power, and that it could at any point be used to manipulate, gaslight, and ultimately hurt me so that he could extract supply, so that he could extract reactions from me, pain from me, anxiety from me. That all gave him power. That all gave that little coward that he is, power over me. Well, no more. That will never happen again. And I want you to say that like a mantra, where you get up and say, no more. I know what the signs are. I know what I need to do. I know how I need to approach every situation. I know how to be true to myself, to my essence. I know how to take care of myself. And you'll be able to do it. From that empowered place, as you're fully healing, you will be able to make better choices. I've been able to do that, put that into practice more and more. I still have my moments, but I feel like in each situation that I'm in, that I come first in terms of, for once in my life, I'm expressing my needs. I want to make myself happy. I want to be able to learn how to give that to myself, irrespective of another person. And I go about doing things that truly make me happy without harming anybody else, of course, which is the opposite of what the narcissist does, because he or she tries to make themselves happy, quote unquote, or their idea of happiness, at other people's expense. No, I'm talking about the happiness where you're giving beautiful moments and things to yourself that don't require another person's resources, that don't require another person's supply or energy or light, that don't require another person's misery for you to have them. And that's what I mean by radical self-care. And also beyond that, just treating yourself. Like, I take myself out to dinner, even with or without friends, with or without a date. Like, I will go if I feel like it. I don't feel like going home and cooking. I will go to a beautiful restaurant and sit at the bar and have and treat myself to a lovely dinner. I will purchase that ticket if I can, save some money and purchase a ticket to travel somewhere new, or take a class, or, you know, take a week, 2 weeks, a month, and only focus on writing, which I love to do, or reading, which I love to do, or without any guilt, binge listen to a podcast, or go check out some jazz band, some live music, which I could never, by the way, do with my ex because he didn't like jazz. But of course, when we first started, that was a different story because then he was mirroring me. So in the beginning, they want to go and do whatever you want to do. All they want to do is be with you. But then you come to find out, as time goes on, that everything that matters to you, you're no longer sharing together, interestingly enough. But I digress. Bringing it back to us, what it is that we need to do, and giving ourselves all those wonderful things, guilt-free, to make ourselves happy, living every moment fully, enjoying, smiling, laughing, friendships that matter. Turn to those people who love you, people who care for you, people who are there for you. And your interests, things that sustain you. If you're a creative type, I urge you, if you've neglected that, go back to it. It's beautiful way, again, to externalize your emotions and while creating beautiful art. So that is a great way. Whatever works for each person. Pursue it. Do something different that you've always wanted to do, or that you come up with, that you feel like doing now. Do it. Now's the time. So those are my pearls of wisdom for this episode. Again, as always, I hope that resonates. I hope that imparts something of value. And now's the time to put things into practice in terms of taking care of yourselves, being compassionate with yourselves, trying new things, living in the moment, pursuing interests and hobbies, and maybe even different career paths that you've always wanted to but didn't get the chance because of the soul-sucking vampire that you were with. Now's the time. So thank you again, everyone. And as always, if you'd like to share your story, leave any comments about what I've said, talked about in this episode or in the podcast and in general, feel free to do so at my email, passagiae@gmail.com. That's passagiae@gmail.com. And remember, you are beautiful souls, beautiful inside and out, incredibly resilient and sensitive and loving, and we will get there. We will get to a place where we're thriving, not only healing, but thriving. It's there. It's within our reach. And we will all make better choices in terms of who we let into our precious lives. Thank you all. I'll be back soon.